Welcome to Talking Bull, the darts podcast. My name's Ian Danter, TalkSport darts commentator. And this is going to be occasional darting podcast looking at what's going on in the world of the PDC and beyond, because there's plenty more besides what Barry Hearn's team have put together so brilliantly over the past few years for us in the world of darts. And I've got the band back together. The TalkSport darts team is joining me for this occasional podcast. So let me introduce my co-conspirators on this show. First, Chris Mace, the Ace Mason, is with us. Mace, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thanks, Dan.
Paul, the Asset Nicholson, another former PDC dart player, is also with us. Nico?
Ahoy, hoy.
Abigail Davis, our backstage interviewer for TalkSport and much more besides, is also with us. Abby, you all right?
All right, Mace.
What's occurred in? And a man who watches more darts thrown in PDC events than anybody else, bar none, commentator Chris Murphy is also part of the team. Murph, how you doing?
Hello, yeah, just enjoying the January break at the moment, but then it's back to non-stop darts.
Well, this is kind of why I thought we should do this, because there's an awful lot to reflect on and an awful lot to look forward to with regard to 2022. But let's start, shall we, by just reflecting on what that world championship that we all just witnessed, what it's thrown up, what it signifies, if anything, makes. I mean, we can look at Peter Wright being every bit the prophet, saying he was going to win the match play in the Worlds, and he did, which is the standout thing, of course, whoever's won it. But what stood out for you from those 15, 16 days of action?
He slowly recaptured that form that he had when he, again, said, oh, I'm going to win the match play and I'm going to win the Worlds. And he went on to do both, but It was just that final. It will live with me for a long, long time. I watched it again on TV when I got home, and those last 10 legs were absolutely staggering. And of course, it was reminiscent of those 8 legs he put together in the semi-final of the Grand Slam against Michael Smith. Yet again, have to feel for Michael, but there was definitely progress. Although, you know, it's another one that's passed him by. That can happen, and it could go on for the rest of his career. I hope it doesn't for his sake, but there's plenty of great players around that didn't quite make it. But ultimately, you know, he's already had a great career for a guy so young that they tend to think dart players peak in their sort of mid-30s. So, listen, he's got time and ability on his side, and hopefully it's just not a matter of time, and it's not if, it's when.
We were also spoilt, Nico, with 9 dart finishes and last leg deciders, weren't we?
Yes, we were for the second year in a row, but we didn't have as many games which went to the very last leg of the contest in the 2022 championship as we did with the previous year. But the drama in some of the games involving Gerwyn Price, for instance, it just seems that drama follows him around. He has the fans when he hits a 9 darter, and then 5 minutes later, they're booing him off the stage again. That's just what comes with the Iceman. But as a championship, I've been trying to surmise it and trying to put it in some sort of order with other ones. I don't think it was the best one we've ever had, but it was one of the most memorable for other reasons. The exclusion of Vincent van der Voort, Dave Chisnell and Michael van Gerwen because of COVID-19, of course, puts that little asterisk next to it. And of course, everybody on social media is going to say, well, Peter Wright's won one, but not everybody competed to the nth degree. So we then look back at what Peter Wright did in the 2017 UK Open. Michael wasn't in that one. And we don't really reflect on that 5 years later as an asterisk. It's just something that happened. Ultimately, the best player in the tournament won it. He had to work really hard for it. But I think the Willie Boland, the 9 dart, is going to live with me forever, because I didn't think I'd ever see a 9 darter to win a world championship match. I thought that John Walton World Masters occasion from a few years ago would be the only one I'd ever see to complete a match on a big stage.
Abby, we managed to get through the tournament with full crowds, which was something that the PDC were desperate to happen. I know Matt Porter, the chief exec, was ticking off the sessions to make sure they got through it. But of course, the crowds did create headlines of their own with the booing. Of course, Gerwyn Price was front and centre, as I think Paul's already kind of made issue of. Is it time for a zero tolerance policy from the PDC with regard to people that overstep the mark, and how do we police that properly?
Absolutely, and I think it's a difficult one this year in particular, because we had a different crowd. You know, we will hopefully next year go back to the position where we've got fans coming from Holland and from Germany, which makes a massive difference, because you don't then get that partisan crowd, and you don't get, you know, all the football chants that seep into the sport, which, you know, it all crossed the line. It didn't feel comfortable watching it, and it certainly, you know, looking at Gedwin Price's face in particular, you just saw so much raw emotion, and speaking to him after his victories, and it's just how it affects him now. And yes, people can say, well, initially he wanted to be the pantomime villain. I think there's a difference between being a pantomime villain and getting booed occasionally throughout the match or during the walk-on. I think Price would be okay with that. It's when he's thrown for a double, or when he's doing a post-match interview after winning a tournament, that's when it becomes disrespectful. Of course, some of the chants in there as well were equally disrespectful, but I think it's when it crosses that line. He doesn't mind a boo here or there, because that's always been part of darts, but I think it's having that knowledge of when it's okay and when it's acceptable to do those things. When it becomes whistling, that's crossing the line, because that can put a player off. And it's when it has that impact on a match and it's a determining factor, that's when it's too much.
Will the game be affected if the PDC did take a firm stance? I don't think so. I think there's a lot of fans that are put off by that raucous party-like atmosphere. Listen, darts was... As much as we have to admit that Barry has changed the scope in terms of the financial rewards, by comparison to the amount of tournaments on years ago, and if you look at inflation, listen, the old guard of the late 70s and 80s, when the game was booming, they didn't have to tolerate that kind of abuse. I mean, yeah, there was a partisan crowd, and they had their favourite, and the other guy had his favourites, and... But it didn't, I think there's going to be more fans put off than we're going to attract. The match play doesn't seem to have that problem, because there's much fewer tickets and you have to be right on the ball. So that tends to attract the more dedicated, the what I'd call the real fan rather than the casual fan. And that shows, because the vast majority of the players, excluding Vincent van der Voort, absolutely loves the match play.
I found it really sad as well when I spoke to Price after one of his matches, and I asked him about, you know, how big a role model he is for young darts players in Wales, and whether he can take some positives from things like that. And he said he'd love to interact with the nice fans, and he'd love to, you know, get to know a few more fans. But because of the level of abuse he receives, he'd rather see none of it than to see the positives, but also have to take on board the negatives. And now we're having a conversation where it's impacting his mental well-being, which it crosses so many lines. And where is the point where we have to say, this can't go on. This isn't darts. This isn't what we want darts to be.
I'm just interested to ask Nicola, really, because you're someone who's been in this position before, where the abuse has been directed personally at you. It's nothing new, is it, to have a bit of sort of... these boos, and I mean, Adrian Lewis had coins thrown at him at a Glasgow Premier League, I think it was. Eric Bristow had cans of beer thrown at him, didn't he, once, whistled over his shoulder. Yeah. But the difference, as Abby was saying here, is that it's kind of crossing the line into booing you because you're Welsh, or because you're, in your case, Australian, or you defined as Australian then, or because you're Gerwyn Price or Paul Nicholson, and for no other reason. So how different is that to deal with than just the kind of random booing?
I think Gerwyn Price has got more to deal with than I ever had. He's got more responsibility on his shoulders, being a world number one, and of course, having the fact that he's got world champion next to his name. With me, it was a case of I invited it, because the moment I went onto that walkway, I looked different and they just didn't like it. And he didn't take to it. And I tried to inflame it for my own fame, which I had to shoulder. That was my responsibility. But the fact of the matter is, Gerwyn Price doesn't do what I did. He didn't wear sunglasses and start trying to shoot the crowd in your first ever TV game. He's gone up there to try and do a job. And he's also shouldering personal things directed towards him and stuff because he's Welsh. That's what I don't understand. Just because you're from a certain place does not invite you to be ridiculed And some of the chants I heard at Alexandra Palace made my skin crawl. And that is something that Gerwyn Price really had to try and ignore.
I think Abby's point about trying to get back to a more cosmopolitan continental crowd mix next year would be very interesting to see whether we do actually get back to a...
The problem is, though, Dance, is that the more it goes on, the more it attracts that type of crowd. They're not fans. I mean, I always say that's a bit... It's a bit like... That when I go and watch sport, you know, I want to see it played to the best of its ability. And in snooker, they don't tolerate it. And that's an individual sport that requires focus and concentration, but it's not tolerated yet. Some of the richest sportsmen in terms of indoor sports are snooker players.
Okay, so before we've got to move on from this, but just quickly, can we effectively put the genie back in the bottle and go back to the best of order, please, days of darts, or have we got to find some happy medium?
Happy medium for me.
Happy certainly medium no, as well. I think we need a little bit of a raucous nature, but at the same time, we do not want to be having the referees giving the fans a lecture.
And we don't want to detract new fans coming either. You know, we want this game to grow. We want new people coming and watching this game. It's just understanding the way to behave.
And the vast majority of people I speak to that, you know, whether I be an exhibition or down the pub having a game of league darts is, oh, we'd love to go, but we can't. We're too scared. There's something wrong there.
Yeah, that certainly has to change. All right, well, one of the upshots, of course, of the World Championships is that it's the end of the year in terms of ranking points and position in the order of merit, and it sorts out your top 64. And that means that some darts players find out they're going to Q school when they weren't hoping that to have to go through that rigmarole post-World Championships. I think, wasn't it Max Hopp who was lying in 64th place and sweating cobs, I imagine, back in Germany as to whether he was going to drop out the top 64. He stayed in there, so he didn't have to deal with Q School. Chris Murphy, let me come to you first on this, because Q School, for the uninitiated, is a fairly brutal qualification process for those outside of the Order of Merit to earn a two-year tour card on the PDC. And it is every bit as brutal as you might imagine, isn't it?
Yeah, it has been made a little bit more favourable to the better players in the last couple of years because they've made it into a couple of stages where before everyone would just enter, it would be an open draw. I think that's where Nico got through in that kind of scenario, actually. He got through Q School. But now there's like a stage for players that finished higher up on the Challenge Tour or dropped off the Pro Tour the previous year. They enter in the second stage when they've kind of got rid of all the players that shouldn't really be there, the delusional ones, shall we say, but they've paid the money and they've had the chance and they've had a bit of fun. But yeah, it is really brutal. And I think it's been interesting to see some of the players that have got through. Of course, since the pandemic started as well, there's been a European Q School and a UK Q School. I think the UK one was very interesting. A lot of the players that we'll probably talk about more throughout these podcasts who were on the Live League, for example, got through. The European one I found really interesting, so I was expecting the likes of Roby John Rodriguez to kind of get through outright and if not dominate the ranking table. He only just sneaked through in the European one. But the big name for me, or the biggest two names, the most entertaining players I'm looking forward to watching on tour next year, is one getting his tour card for the first time in Cameron Menzies, and the other one is Richie Burnett, the Prince of Wales, getting his tour card back.
Well, you've just pushed an open door with Abigail Davies there. As if there weren't enough people from the Principality making ways. It is good to see Richie back, isn't it, Abby? It's wonderful for him. He's been away too long.
Absolutely. The one question I've got, though, is what's Louis Williams going to do with his nickname? Who's claiming the Prince of Wales nickname? But, yeah, it's absolutely superb to see him back on tour. We want characters, and he is one of the ultimate characters in this game. And on his day, a great darts player to watch. We've seen him appear here and there on the Pro Tour, but watching him regularly, he's the one that you want on the streaming board. He's the one you want on the streaming board every time because he's box office. And, you know, we all know, we've all seen the interview that he did when he was told that he'd have to play on the 27th of December and he was absolutely gutted because he was going to miss Boxing Day. And he's just class, he's quality, and I'm so thrilled to see him back.
Tell you, we'll talk about the Welsh. Nico, you've been making note in your Sporting Life column about the emergence of the Polish, because Krzysztof Ratajski's got a bit more competition now.
Yeah, Krzysztof Kuczuk deserves a lot of credit, because when he first came through Q School 2 years ago, he was given no chance. And he's really impressed me in the last 12 months. I think he's reached a new level of performance. And even though he dropped off the tour, he's got his card back immediately, which is very hard to do. But now we've got Radek Zagański coming through. And I just feel that the Polish players are starting to really make their presence felt. There are other players who didn't make it, like Sebastian Stajer and Sebastian Bielecki. And I just feel that we are ripe for going to Poland for a big event. But I think we have to wait for the pandemic to just dissipate a little bit more before we do so. Is it a risk going to Poland? It's always a risk going to a new territory. But the fact of the matter is, we are now having players from Poland on a regular basis, and we need to massage this, because Zagański can play. He has played in Ireland. He's made the final of the Tom Kirby Memorial, and he is going to go under the Polish flag, I believe, now that he's come through Q School. And these guys can play. They're going to worry people, all with the godfather of Polish darts, the Polish eagle, Krzysztof Ratajski.
Mace, we've seen that two of the very familiar names that are back with tour cards in James Wilson and Darren Webster. Are there any big losers from this Q School who've not made it through that have surprised you? We mentioned Rabbage on there sneaking in.
Yeah, and he had to rely on other results to get his spot. We've seen a lot of players on the live league, myself, Murph and Nico. So it wasn't really a surprise for me for Burnett to get his tour card, because we know he has levels and they are very high when he's absolutely on it. Like most players who tend to fade later on in their career, they lose their B game. But there was one player we've seen a lot of in the live league that me and Nico really like, Sean McDonald. He narrowly missed out. He averaged 92.49 for the tournament, but could barely get a win. Matthew Edgar played lovely as well, 91.82. And again, suffered early doors. Thibaut Tricol, who we've seen on the live league as well, he averaged nearly 91, didn't get a card. People like Dom Taylor, Robert Thornton, another player, averaged over 90 and narrowly missed out. Matthew Dennett, who looked nailed on for a card. Mike Warburton. So many players that we'd seen a lot of that we probably, and the way they started, should have got through. Of course, Fallon Sherrick was a... well, depending on what side of the fence you sit on, I suppose, a bit of a surprise. She popped and fizzed at times through some really, really interesting stuff, but her draws were horrendous when you look around at some of the other opportunities other players got, where she could have got some momentum and she never quite got any. But one player that did stand out for me, a good friend of mine, and I'm sure of Nico's and Murph's, Mark McGeaney, who's had a torrid couple of years on the tour. He played some really, really encouraging stuff. Did miss out on a tour card, but positive signs going forward. And one I'm really looking forward to, we've seen Scott Waits before, of course, with a card. Never really quite produced the darts we expected. But Jose Justicia, a guy from Spain who spent a lot of time in the early stages of the live league, and one of these kind of guys that a bit like Boris, can produce really serious high levels of darts. He actually ended up topping the table in terms of averages, just shy of 94. But one guy that I was really, really impressed with, he's come back from a couple of hand operations, Mickey Mansell, who averaged 93.5 for the entire qualifying stages.
Nico, you've been through the Q School thing in recent times, and it chews you up and spits you out. Can you give us a perspective on what it's like for those players who they try and try and try, but it doesn't work from at Q School, and they're left after that few days with nothing? What do they do from that point?
Well, it's a very good question you pose, Dance, because I've been speaking to Jared Cole the last few days, and I spoke to him in a very raw state after he had not qualified. He was pretty close to getting a card, but was ultimately denied, and he just felt so bereft in the 48 hours after not getting his card, because he felt he was going to get it this year. He's been so close so many times, and now he's got to go through the challenge tour, and that challenge tour starts this weekend. So there's no turnaround. So you've got to have a really good chin. Take it on the chin, and you've got to get back on the horse immediately. It's really, really tough to swallow. if you've constantly lost out the last few years. But the opportunities are bigger than ever before. You can go in the live league, you can play in WDF, you can possibly get an invite. If you're up that list, in previous years, you would have got an invite to certain PDC Pro Tour events, but now they're going to do it via the Challenge Tour Order of Merit. So if you don't get back on that horse, you're not going to get those invites. But there are still plenty of opportunities away from the tour to try and have a crack in 2023.
If you're going to miss out, this is the year to miss out, because what was the modern amateur darts as well has now been renamed for obvious reasons to the amateur dart circuit. Well, they're launching tournaments up and down the country. Like I say, you've got the WDF, their ranking events, and the England darts as well, got all their ranking events, and you've got the Challenge Tour. So all is not lost. And ultimately, you know, you've got to take it that if you didn't qualify, you know, there can be some circumstances and situation which means you've missed out. But ultimately, at this time, you're not quite good enough. You know, you've got 4 days to qualify. If you can't do damage in those 4 days, you're just not quite ready yet. Because trust me, if you don't dominate the Q school, you are going to get swallowed up in the Pro Tour.
Well, from the bottom to the top, let's go next on the Talking Ball, the darts podcast, because the Masters, as we talk, is just around the corner. Chris Murphy, let me start with you. We know that Danny Noppert can't take part because he's just about to become or has become a father. I'm not sure what the position is, whether he is now a dad and is looking after baby. But we do still have an incredibly tough field. What's your view going into this Masters for 2022?
Yeah, Simon Whitlock's not a bad replacement. That seems to be a role that he's taking quite regularly recently. A couple of times he got into tournaments from other players withdrawing and had decent runs at them as well, so it'd be a good one to watch. But I was just having a look at the draw, and there are just areas of the draw that are really stacked. And I think that the player that's probably got the best draw is one that should be full of confidence, rather than sort of still feeling sorry for himself about that World Championship final. And that's Michael Smith, who would take on either Christoph Ratajski or Gabriel Clemens in his second round match, a top 16 players coming in the second round. And then James Wade, probably, who we beat in the semi-final very comfortably in the next round. So I think Michael Smith has a real chance at a run at this title. You've got Price would play Ryan Searle or Mervyn King, and then maybe Johnny Clayton. You've got Van Gerwen, who we don't really know where he's at. Well, I know where he is. He's on holiday in Mexico, so I'm not sure how many darts he's throwing. But actually, I did see a picture of Michael Van Gerwen with a practice board in his hotel room, and I've never, ever seen that before. But he could run into Luke Humphreys, who's in form, then Gary Anderson. So I just think it's opened up really nicely for Michael Smith, and I think, you know, it could be the one where he does get that title.
It's a fascinating tournament to come. You guys, don't you take dartboards everywhere you go and hang them on the back of your hotel door?
No, I used to take crates of beer, dance. They didn't have them in my day. You had to find... We had to find a local pub that we could contact and see if, you know, whenever it was quiet and go in there. There used to be a little working men's club around the corner from the lakeside, and they would kindly shut us off an area where we could all go in and practice. But yeah, we didn't have those freestanding stands or things that wrap around the door, or they weren't around.
When the on-tour devices came in, Dance, we started taking them to Premier Inn hotels, and all of a sudden the cleaners were thinking, why are all of these black straps on the doors all of a sudden? And there's a little thing on the back of it that says on the other side, dart players in action. And they're thinking, what's going on the other side of the door? Well, all of a sudden, all these dart boards appear, and you know when the dart players are in town because those black straps are on all the hotel room doors.
There's also a caution sign, isn't there, which makes me worried when I'm walking past their room, because I just think, how am I going to be affected by this dartboard? I'm on the other side of the door. How bad can some of these players be? But yeah,
well, Ryan Searle was playing, you'd be in trouble.
Yeah. They'll knock the door down, those bad boys. But yeah, I'm a bit disappointed in you all for not calling the Masters and referring to it as the tournament that got the Year of the Ferret up and running. That's how we now refer to the Masters.
Just before we move on, Peter Wright's actually got a little it's kind of like the shape of a wedge of cheese that's only got the 1, the 5 and the 20 segment on it. And he just hooks that on a picture hook or something like that and throws darts at that. So that's I'm assuming he's precise enough to hit it all the time, or maybe there are holes in some hotel room walls.
One thing that we have discovered is that Barry Hearn is only going to reveal the Premier League competitors after the Masters, which is fairly unusual. Only 4 days between the Master winner being decided and the Premier League starting. That says to me, Nico, two things. One, I think the eight players already know who they are for this new format, and that, you know, it just hasn't been made public yet. Because I can't imagine, Nico, how you can tell somebody with 4 days' notice that they're involved in a Premier League jamboree.
I'm surprised by it. I'm convinced that seven know. Because I can pretty much, and I think everybody within the field can tell you who those seven players are going to be. But there's a few trying to hold on to that eighth spot. I'm just not sure who it's going to be. But if they are going to have it like last year, where, say, Mervyn King and Johnny Clayton make the final and the winner of that match goes to play the Premier League, well, imagine having the 3 days' notice to go to Cardiff from Milton Keynes. I mean, that's not the ideal preparation for maybe one of the biggest campaigns of your career, because Johnny Clayton had plenty of time to wait when it came to last year, because the Masters finished at the end of January and the Premier League didn't start until April. But this time, 3 days? If I was in that situation, I don't think it would be ideal preparation. But I tell you what, it does make it very exciting, very like last year, which I loved because it gave the Masters a bit of extra spice.
Are we all happy with the new format of the Premier League?
No, I don't. Yeah, and no, it needed something different, but I'm sure they could have done something where, you know, that I understand they've got to keep the top players in it because they're the attraction, but there should have been some kind of rotational system, because after 16 weeks, I mean, I know we've see the same players every week and we know they play each other twice, but the way it could work out, we're going to have a lot of repeat matches. So, you know, And there is a bit more value because there's now seven matches a night. But if they were prepared to play seven matches a night, then surely they could have done something where they made it. I think for this year especially, you can make a case that there'd be 12 players in it. That's only six matches a night. So that's less. You know, even having a 12-man event or a 12-player event, should I say. So in one way I'm excited because it's something different. I think it'll be great for the fans that are live. I think a few players are going to be disappointed to be left out. I mean, I'm sure we're going to go through the eight. Mines, Price, Wright, Van Gerwen, Wade, Smith, Anderson, Clayton and Rob Cross. I think they picked themselves. Last year's runner-up in the Premier League is going to miss out in De Souza, but excluding Anderson, you know, they're all big winners in the last 12 months.
Yeah, I completely agree with Mace, to be honest. When I first heard about it, I was a big fan because it's the PDC trying to do something new, trying to do something different. But with such a small pool of players, you know, by week seven, if we're watching Gedwin Price against Peter Wright in the final for a seventh successive week, it starts to lose its appeal for the viewer watching on TV. And I get it that it enhances the experience if you're going to one Premier League event live. I completely get that's then enhanced for you because you're watching almost an individual tournament. So I think in that regard, it's a positive. But I agree. I would, if we're going to go down this route, maybe have some different players each week so that you're seeing, you know, we talked about one of the biggest things to emerge from the Worlds is all the youth that we saw, all the youngsters coming through. And I think, you know, could you include some of those players just to play one or two weeks? I think that would be the opportunity to freshen it up that way, because we see all these players playing each other on the Pro Tour every week. We see them at then big tournaments. If we're then seeing the same matches at the Premier League as well, I think it could become a little bit stale, personally.
I totally agree with Abby and Chris on this. I've been asked a few times over the last few days about what I think about this, and I think a change was needed. But this change for me, everybody's talking about the same thing, and that is the fact that if we repeat these matches every week, we are just going to be talking about maybe MVG versus Wright. You know, they've already played each other over, you know, how many times? I think it's over 80. Well, they could break 100 by the end of this year. I mean, that's ridiculous. Variety is the spice of life. So stick some variety in there. That's what I say.
I want to see Rids in there and Luke Humphreys and,
absolutely,
and players like that. I want to see and give them an opportunity to evolve and grow. And the only way you do that is by being given opportunities. And I know, you know, you've got to create your own. Well, they sort of have created their own. Callum Ridge's run in the world was outstanding. Luke Humphreys, we know, is, what's that, 4 quarterfinals in the world. He made the final of the UK Open. You know, and as much as I, you know, love the old players, they don't have to miss out. Make it a 12-man field and do the 8 and then incorporate another 4 players or a second mini league that you run side by side. Listen, 6 matches, even if you played 8 matches a night, you know, we do that in other tournaments and it's not a problem. You know, don't get me wrong, I think from a fan's perspective, which is where the money is obviously generated for the PDC, it's fabulous because you are going to see it, as Abby said, like a mini comp every week. But from a viewing spectacle, and especially the media, you know, the media are going to get very little opportunity to interact with the players, because if you've just lost, what's the point in interviewing them? If they've just won, they've not got time for an interview. It's it that PDC very rarely get it wrong. I may be proven completely wrong on this, but from everybody I've spoke to who work in the industry, we're all saying the same thing. It could get a little stale.
I agree with the positives and the negatives. I am willing to give it a chance because, you know, we've not seen what it will play out like. But I agree with Abby about the fans on the night will get a really good experience, their own tournament. It seems like we're all in agreement. Are we all in agreement about the 8 players that Mace mentioned as well? Because I think they'll be the 8 too.
I don't think so. I think Chris got 7 of them. I think Cross is going to lose out for some reason. I just think being 11th in the world, I think they might just wait for the Masters. If Cross does have a magnificent Masters, he gets it.
Sorry, boys, the Masters, though, a bigger tournament than the European Championships?
Absolutely not, because the Europeans is ranked. He won that, and he won it well in the final against Michael van Gerwen. But for some reason, just in the bottom of my gut, I think the other 7 are not debutants. I think they'll just want some sort of other area to be massaged. And I think if somebody has a good Masters, they might nick that spot.
You wouldn't leave somebody out after winning a major tournament, surely, Paul?
All I want to do is have a bit of company in my little corner. You know, yeah. I'm the only person ever to have won a major and not be in the next Premier League. It happened to Wade last year, but ultimately he got the spot.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think I've got a feeling it might happen this year.
One question then. So people talk about how ruthless the Premier League can be if you're a debutant or if it's not going well for you. Do you think if you were to introduce someone like Callan Ridds into this format, this new format, do you think it could be a lot easier if you don't have a good run in this format?
Well, yeah, because it's a table system. So it's a knockout basis and you get more points for winning games. But I know people say, well, that's similar to the league phase of the Premier League, but you can get quickly bogged down looking at yourself at the bottom of the table every time, where, you know, you've only got to have one really good night, you know, which players tend to do. They'll have one good night and maybe have a couple of bad nights. But I don't think mentally it would be as crucifying as we've seen, you know, in the past with you know, with like Glenn Durrant last year or Wes Newton or Andy Hamilton. You know, those players got effectively just destroyed by the Premier League. Where I think that this time round, if they wanted to change it, do a knockout format, but have a system where players come in and come out, you know, like a double elimination thing. You know, if they wanted to spice up and do something different, they really could have been a little bit more experimental than giving us, you know, an 8-man field. That's, you know, like I said, I'm with Murph. I'll give it every chance. I'm excited to see how it plays out. I'd be excited as a fan if I was going, that's for sure.
I go back to Nico's idea that he floated to us during the World Championships of the Royal Rumble style of darts, where you get 2 players out there, the winner stays on, then you hear the theme music of the next player coming up the aisle to take the one. I'd quite enjoy that. I'm not sure whether
it would be immense.
I'm not sure whether you can make it last beyond one tournament, but
they've given themselves the opportunity to do something like that on opening night of the Premier League. If they're going to announce, tell the players, keep it secret from all the crowd, let's reveal them as they walk onto the stage.
That's great. That's got potential. Well, let's hope something like that happens, and let's hope Nico gets his cut from any profits that are derived from it. Now, Mace, you mentioned Callum Ridds there. I think that is top of my list of names to really look out for to do something special in 2022. Are there any other names that you guys want to throw into the mix as players along with Callum who really have the potential to write headlines this year?
Yeah, I think Ryan Searle would continue to make progress. I like the progress of Luke Humphreys. And I like the progress of Callum Ridds with Luke Humphreys because they've come through the system. And when you see players come through the system, it's very encouraging because they've sort of passed every exam along the way. And that's always nice to see. I'm really fascinated. I don't think I missed a dart in terms of tracking the Q score via Dart Connect. I know a lot about Jamie Clark, who was one of the first players through. Ted Ebbets, even in disappointment over the last couple of years, he's come back, won the World Youths, gone on to regain a tour card. Connor Scutt's a really exciting player to look out for. Maybe not this season. I think it'll take him a season to settle in, but we've seen him in the live league at astronomical numbers. Nathan Rafferty, another young, exciting player from Northern Ireland, another guy that will do damage. And there was another guy, an interesting story. We had him in the live league, George Killington. He got his tour card right at the beginning of the pandemic, but he cares for a vulnerable relative. So unfortunately, he was unable to play. And when you talk about having a bit of grit and determination, you know, that disappointment of fulfilling a dream and then not being able to take it because you have to make sacrifices to come back and get a card all over again. I'm super proud of the kid. I think it's a wonderful story.
I think we have to give a bit of a mention to two people who decided not to play in the second year of getting their card from last year. Robert Marjanovic, who wasn't able to play a great deal at all in 2021, and Kirk Shepherd, who's decided to let his tour card go because he now has dartitis at a really bad level. That is something that you don't want to see from someone like Kirk, who was really encouraged by getting his card 12 months ago. But Mace has really touched well on there, on the people who could come through Q School and have a great year. But the people who already have their cards, I think we're going to get a good year from Daryl Gurney. I think there's a lot to be encouraged by him. And I know everybody's going to love this name, Florian Hempel, because he showed in the world what he's capable of. He can do much more on the floor. And as far as what he's defending in 2022, absolutely nothing in ranking points. So he's only going up.
Ross Smith is another one for me as well. I'm really encouraged by his progress.
Can I just throw Keane Barry into the mix as well?
I'm excited to see Cameron Menzies back on tour as well. I think, you know, the way he played in the live league and again in Q School, I think he's one that Murph mentioned earlier. He's going to be really exciting to watch back on tour because he seems like he's got his head screwed on now, doesn't he? He seems like he's applying himself in the right way. We know he's got the darts, but he's now applying himself in the right way.
I'm going to call you on that, Abby, halfway through the season when he's been cited by the DRA about six times and he's had a few set twos with Richie Burnett and possibly with some other players like John O'Shea. It's going to be very much a 2022 that isn't going to be dull.
Absolutely.
Cameron Menzies, of course, is in a relationship with Fallon Sherrick and she's probably got one of the best mentalities of any darts player. So maybe that's rubbing off a little bit on those two extremes, her really strong mentality, him being a little bit crazy. Maybe that's really helping Cameron Menzies' game. One more name I just want to throw in as well, an established player who I think will continue to rise, who Paul doesn't think will be in the Premier League, but the rest of us do, is Rob Cross. I think that he's really kind of hit a trough and he's on the way to a peak again.
Interesting. Yeah, we've mentioned Fallon Sherrick, so let's go there, at least briefly, Nico. You wrote a very, very good piece online about the toxicity that surrounds Fallon on social media and the brilliant way in which she deflects all of that away. If we peel all that away and just get down to brass tacks, what sort of year do we foresee Fallon having in the PDC without a tour card?
She's still got a lot of opportunities. I think she'll get back on the horse very quickly. I think she'll go to the Challenge Tour. I think she will earmark the women's series events in the PDC, of which there are going to be more in 2022, and try and boss that, because she won the Order of Merit in 2021. But one of the things that's not being talked about is the fact that Lisa Ashton and Fallon Sherrick do not have tour cards, either of them, now, which makes both of them maybe eligible, depending on what the WDF do with their tournament, but they might both be in the Women's World Championship draw. Now, what we all want to see, whoever you like, whether it's Lisa or Fallon or both, is to see them in the final. That's what we want in April at Lakeside in the Women's World Championship. If that happens, then rub your hands together and let's watch that. It could well be Fallon's first World Championship, and it is one of the asterisks against her name, because Lisa's got four of them, Trina's got 10 of them, Anastasia's got three, but Fallon hasn't got one. Now, this may be a blessing in disguise, her not getting through Q School, because she now has a crack at a World Championship, which would obviously erase that asterisk. As far as other opportunities are concerned, if she goes through the Challenge Tour, the Live League, the Women's Series, there's still plenty of things for her to do, and she can try again to get the tour card next year. She's only 28.
When we talk about those, you know, that we're looking forward to seeing in 2022 sort of take the next steps, Mace, I'm wondering about those who are a bit concerned going into 2022, those who are defending rather a lot of ranking points and don't have the form to back it up.
Yeah, well, you've got there's a lot of players defending a lot of money this year. Dimitri, Nathan Aspinall. The list is endless, and Nathan Aspinall's injury has got to be of concern, because it's something it's something I suffered with, and it's not something that just goes away. mine didn't go away until I retired 10 years ago. Ironically, been fine ever since, which is there's a lot of players' form that have been concerned. Daryl Gurney down at 22 in the world, you know, an ever-present top 10 player, but looks to be going in the right direction. Ian White, who's another player that seems to have been inside that top 16 forever, down at 24. Whitlock down at 25. Devin Peterson down at 26. Sulovic at 27. I mean, they're going to be overtaken by your Damon Hetters, Callan Ridds, Chris Dobie, Ross Smith, Ryan Joyce, William O'Connor, Jamie Hughes, Adrian Lewis. This is the big fear. Down at 39 in the world. He potentially, if has a bad year, will be at Q School next year.
I think on top of that, we have to look at a stats package that the PDC released this week. And I know Murph has got this package as well. Because out of everybody on the tour who currently has a card, the person who's at risk the most this year is Jeffrey Desvaughn. He's defending over 90% of his Order of Merit, which is a staggering statistic. But if you look down this list, you look at 86% for Steve West, 77% for Glenn Durrant. But the one that really piques my interest is Devin Peterson, with 73% of his Order of Merit to defend. And that's not too dissimilar to Simon Whitlock, who has got a lot to defend this year. He's got lucky by getting into the Masters field, but that's not ranked. So maybe 2022 is starting on the right foot for him, but it's the ranking events that are going to stipulate what kind of a year he has. And I know Murph has definitely got some stuff on this.
Just a quick one, Dan. Just going back to what Paul said, and that piece he did for the Sporting Life was beautifully put, better than any way I could have put in it that could have gone out before 10 at night anyway. it's no secret that the WDF did struggle to sell tickets. I know they had problems with getting the draw done and then the schedule and everything else, and they decided to pull the plug, which on reflection may not have been a bad thing when you look at the ticket sales. But from a commercial point of view, they have to find a... Listen, they can... The beauty of running an organisation like the WDF, you can change rules as, when and where. And if there was an ever opportunity to change the rules, it is now. For the sake of that tournament and the promotion of the event, get Fallon and Lisa in it. Get them in there somehow, because that will boost ticket sales, which will encourage more people to watch it, of course, which will encourage more people to invest in the brand. It's an absolute no-brainer. And I would be amazed if they didn't find a way of getting them both in there.
On that, there's an easy justification for them to do that, because, of course, the handful of the players that were in that World Championship have got through Q School, therefore ineligible to play in it. So they need to replace players anyway. Obviously, that doesn't count towards a women's tournament, but there is an opportunity for a complete reset and rethink about how that tournament will work. Just going back to Paul's point about the players that are defending a lot of money, I think the same as Paul. Looking down the list, there are players that are really struggling, whether it be through injury, whether it be through complete loss of form, like the likes of Glenn Durrant and Devon Peterson, Jermaine Watamina, another one that hasn't been mentioned, who just seems to have completely dropped 10 points, 15 points even off his average in the last couple of years. So I think there are a lot of players that need to worry. 10th on that list, though, is one that I don't think I'll ever worry about, which is Gary Anderson, defending more than £300,000, two-thirds of his prize money, but he'll just have a run at the World Championship, won't he, and stay in the top 10 again. Exactly.
Yeah, the tournament he doesn't care about. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. he's a piece of work at times, isn't he, Ando, the way he sort of doesn't sell himself, sort of knocks himself down. Do you know what? We've mentioned the Live League a lot during the course of this chat. Just explain, either of you guys, Nico or Mace, because you're front and centre with this, the importance of the Live League and where it stands in terms of importance with regard to other events and other competitions.
To be honest with you, when we look at the Live League, when the pandemic started, we were playing in our own bedrooms, our own garages, and you know, it was incredible. We had a player from Russia, we had Keen Barry playing in the Czech Republic from his girlfriend's house, with all of her trophies in the background, not even his, but it has progressed to a studio in 2021 and the standard has gone up, in my opinion, overall. We have got a real stream of players who now have been given a home to play. I was speaking to a guy called Simon Hall, who is the marketing director of Winmore, one of the biggest brands in the world. And he said, dart players are lazy, but if you give them somewhere to play, tell them what time to do it and how many games they'll have, they'll show you what they've got. And that is exactly what the Live League has done. It's given dart players who do not have a card a home and something to shoot for if they haven't got tournaments coming up. It's made lazy dart players get off their butt and do something. And Richie Burnett in 2021 played more games than anybody else. And look what he's just done.
Yeah, and in terms of importance, Jamie Clark, Live League player. Connor Scott, Live League player. Richie Burnett, Live League player. Kevin Burness, Live League player. Cameron Menzies, Live League player. John O'Shea, Live League player. George Killington, Live League player. Nick Falwell, Live League player. So, you know, 90% of those that have qualified for getting a tour card were Live League players.
A couple of European ones as well, mate. So, Jose Hastings here, and I think Brian Roman might have played once.
Yeah. Brian Roman had 2 weeks down there, and Jose was down a lot. And obviously, as I said, he was involved. I mean, it gives you, listen, you can practice all you like. It doesn't prepare you for a match. If you can do match play practice and there's something on the line, when you actually get under the lights, it just feels normal. That's why it isn't the practice that's important. It's the type of practice. And the Live League, listen, it's a proper studio with proper TV cameras. It's broadcast on TV Thursday and Friday and Saturday nights. It's live across the internet on your TV during the day, well, the mornings and the afternoons. And there's big money. There's 35 grand every 5 weeks up for grabs. And, you know, if things progress like they were, like they're going to this year, it's gonna blow people's minds.
We mentioned the WDF as well, and of course the fact they've had to postpone the World Championships at Lakeside. They plan to do it, of course, as we used to get with the BDO in the immediate aftermath of the PDC Worlds. That I quite like that idea that there is a bit of separation, Abby, between the two tournaments. I like that there's a beat, that there's a pause. You always felt, at least I did, as looking casually at it, that the BDO was just piggybacking on the back of the whatever audience figures the PDC got on Sky. I'd be really interested to see how much interest is generated for what will effectively be a standalone tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think wrongly, people judged the standard of darts in the BDO by what they saw at the PDC. And I think that was completely wrong. It was completely, you know, not taken into account how different the events were. And I think there's been a lot of talk about what the WDF, what their intentions are. They're not rivals of the PDC, which is, you know, a message that many have got a bit bogged down in, really. But yeah, I think it's going to be great to see it as a standalone. The intentions of the WDF and what I've heard secondhand from Richard Ashdown. But yeah, I think, you know, the intentions are fantastic, and we need something like this as another gateway, a pathway into the PDC. And I think it's fantastic. It's not trying to rival it, and it's very exciting to see what they're trying to do with it.
The WDF, Abby, are doing something at the minute which the PDC can't do. They are still utilising worldwide affiliations in smaller environments to try and find the talent that we need to feed through. You look at Brian Roman, who was the WDF world number one going into that tournament, is now a PDC professional. So we still need feeder systems from other parts of the world, from the United States, from Canada, from Australia and New Zealand, and all around the globe. That's what the WDF have. They have these affiliations everywhere, and the PDC have theirs, but not to the same level. The PDC have got Dart Players Australia, they've got the CDC now, which is starting to get real traction. But we get players in the WDF from Scandinavia and from other parts of the world that the PDC don't quite have yet. That's why it's important.
Rutajski came through the BDO system, won the World Masters. The next thing you know, he's qualified for a tour card, and the rest is history. We need, it's the side of the sport as well that the PDC are not particularly interested in. It's like WDF and PDC, it's apples and oranges. One caters for the weekend player or the Super League player or the county player, where, you know, the PDC, although it does have development tours, so it's that next generation of kids up from the JDC, you know, then onto the Challenge Tour. So it does have a system, but we also, you know, players from Scandinavia or from certain other territories, they don't have the finances to play Q School or play Challenge Tour or the European Challenge Tour. It's too expensive. Where the WDF, you can learn your trade, qualify for, my hope and my dream one day is the winner of the WDF World Championships gets a two-year tour card.
Because if the PDC don't necessarily care to admit it, the WDF is very important to them.
Well, not necessarily nowadays. There is other routes, like I've said, JDC. We've seen players now in the top 32 in the world that have gone JDC Development Tour, Challenge Tour, Pro Tour, and so on. There is their own sort of system, but like I said, that does one size doesn't fit all. The vast majority of us came through that BDO system of playing Super League, county, local tournaments, ranking tournaments, and ultimately qualifying for the Masters and the Match Play.
Okay, well, let's go to the other end of the scope because we're running a bit short of time now, guys. But the World Seniors Championship is also on the way. Mace, I know you tried to qualify for that, didn't quite make it through. Obviously, Phil Taylor's the main attraction. What impact is the Seniors Championship likely to have on the sport in general?
Well, there's nothing for us. Once you hit 50, being a pro dart player, unless you've really looked after yourself, which is something that don't, you know, certainly in my era, we didn't tend to be that concerned about health or diet or anything else. You just sort of went from week to week trying to win as much as you could and qualify for as much as you could. So there's still plenty of really good players who are in that sort of age bracket that think, do you know what? I can't take the rigors of, you know, hotel to hotel and playing, you know, tournaments four or five at a spin and then going off to somewhere else. And then, you know, it's hard graft. People think you just stand there, you know, throwing darts at a board. It's what it does to you mentally and physically. So this option for that generation of players who still, like me, I still enjoy playing. There's no way I'd go to Q School and get put through the ringer like that. Absolutely not in a million years. But I still enjoy playing darts. So there's literally thousands of us in the same boat that still would like to enjoy playing darts. If I got to a decent enough level, I'd love to qualify for a TV tournament just to experience it all over again, because, you know, there's there's no better feeling when you're playing well, stood on a stage, standing on a stage and going head to head with a rival.
I heard a great quote the other day, Mace, from the former Pittsburgh Steelers head coach, Bill Cowher, who said, "I miss the game, I don't miss the lifestyle." And that really did get my brain churning. And I look at the field and I think there's a lot of players who will miss the game, but they won't miss the lifestyle. But I'll be really, really interested to see what the narrative is around a lot of these players, because there are so many stories to tell.
Yeah, and you know, as you know, like, I'm a big advocate for mental health, as we all are here. And it left a hole in my life. You know, there was the hole that the only thing I ended up filling it with was getting back into fitness, and that sort of just filled that gap. It gave me something to concentrate on. You got to, you know, just looking at Andy Hamilton, who had a bit of a falling out at Q School, you know, and he's come out and said, "Look, my head's wrecked," and that is a problem. When it's great when you're up there and everything's perfect, you know, and that's not, don't get me wrong, that's not confusing sadness with actual, you know, depression, but one can create a pathway to the other. And, you know, there is a lot of players around that sort of, you know, late 40s, early 50s, whose career is maybe in limbo, and they're starting to panic. What can I do? What do I do? Do I go back to work? You know, what's next for us? You know, we're fortunate that we've all, you know, well, myself and Nico as ex-players sort of carved out a career in the media, but that was a conscious decision long before we got an opportunity. So I do fear for players, and, you know, not only is it going to be a great spectacle and a great opportunity for fans to see Peter Manley back up there, and Taylor and Wazza, Bob Anderson, Lowy, you know, the list is endless. It's a great opportunity going forward, because it's not just the World Championships. They've now announced that there is a tour. So the World Championships, third to the 6th of February. Then 19th to the 20th March, it's an open series event. Then the 8th to the 10th of April, it's qualifiers for the Seniors Masters, which is going to be at Lakeside on the 28th and 29th of May. Then there's a match play. There's qualifiers for that. So, you know, I'm looking at the calendar thinking, if I can sort of work, you know, my TV stuff and live league stuff around it, you know, I'm going to play in as much as ever I can, because there's an end game to it. You know, it's not like having this dream that, you know, I'm 35 again and going to go to Q School and resurrect my career, which Paul Nicholson has a chance to do, of course. And he's a lot fitter and healthier than I was at his age. I put a picture on Facebook the other day. It looks like I've got a wok under my shirt.
The one thing about the draw, because obviously there are plenty of females in the draw. You've got Dieter Hedman, who plays Peter Manley first, which is going to be so much fun. And the winner plays Phil Taylor. Trina Gulliver's in the second round because she obviously won 10 world titles. Mm-hmm. And Lisa Ashton's in the bottom half. But I implore every single darts fan to look at this match and get a mop for your saliva, which is Robert Thornton versus Bob Anderson. Now, Bob was pretty much everybody's hero in the late 80s because of the way he jacked up the personality of the game. I want to see that pointing at the board when he hits a 180. But him against Thornton, a clash of generations. And I'm actually salivating right now, just thinking about that match. And Trina Gulliver's got to play the winner.
We shouldn't let ourselves into a false sense of security that a player on the seniors tour is suddenly going to find a route back to, you know, the PDC and, you know, getting deep into world championships. That's not going to happen, right?
Yeah, you've got to look at a lot of these guys have been inactive. Taylor hasn't had a competitive dart for probably 2 years. Peter Manley plays in the odd thing here and there. He faces Dieter Hedman, who played at Q School. You never quite know what you're going to get with Wayne Warren. Tony O'Shea against Kevin Painter, who plays Wayne Warren, the winner of that match. That is intriguing. Thornton, as I said, he can still play at a very, very high level. He's one of those on the short list for me. He's facing Bob Anderson, as Paul said. Paul Lim against Dave Prinz, winner plays John Lowe. Again, fascinating. John Parr also had a run out at Q School. And literally, I spoke to him at the Worlds, and he said, "I'm just going to play just to get some competitive action." Great move from John Parr. And at times, threw some decent stuff. I think Lisa Ashton could win it, you know.
I agree completely. Yeah, I think Lisa Ashton can win this.
I agree. Just to counter that point, though, let's not forget that Kevin Benes came through the qualifier to play at the World Seniors and then got a tour card at Q School. So there are different players at different stages of their career that are in it for different reasons. And one point I just quickly wanted to make is, I think it's a little bit overdue, but somebody had to go and set it up. So full credit to Jason Tame and Jason Francis for doing that. But in what other sport could you get somebody who played in the very first World Championship final appearing back on stage playing darts? And John Lowe, who played in the first one, won the second one. Mez talked about there being nothing there at the age of 50. John Lowe's going to be 76 when he takes to the stage at the Circus Tavern, and that's just incredible. And I think it just reminds us as well how new actually darts is as a professional game. The first World Championship was only in 1978.
I was only watching his nine darter the other day. It suddenly came up on my Twitter feed or something, and just the size of those barrels going into that ridiculous.
And how small the trebles were.
Yeah, ridiculously small treble 20, and there was no red bit left when the third dart went in. There was nothing to be seen. Well, the barrels.
The skill was, Dance, is you had to play across the treble, so your first dart would be left, and then you'd have to go middle and right. That was an actual skill. You see a lot of these quick players now; they just literally throw the dart the same, and they can hit a 180 vertically. That was never possible, even back in my day, like late sort of mid to late 90s and early 2000s. It wasn't until 2002, 2003 they started to improve, and of course from then they've got bigger and bigger, which makes some of Taylor's records even more outrageous.
Just forgive my ignorance, but is this seniors tournament being televised?
It's on BBC Red Button and iPlayer, so just press your TV, press your button on your TV, and you can watch it as is. It's the same platform that the recent snooker was on. And you can watch it on iPlayer on all your devices. So yeah, it'll be starts on Thursday. A week next Thursday. 2 weeks today.
And you might hear some voices that you've heard today.
Yeah.
Subtly done, Murph. Subtly done. Well, we're pretty much out of time. But what this conversation between the five of us has thrown up is that there's so much to look forward to in all aspects of professional darts. And indeed, amateur darts, if you want to put it that way, 2022. There's so much. Well, you can look in five different directions and see something going on that's got a massive bearing on the sport.
Yeah, and all over the world as well. The CDC, as Paul mentioned, is growing and growing and growing in America, in the States. The JDC continues to churn out these incredible youngsters. The WDF now will eventually get a chance to put their marker down. Obviously, I'm looking forward to the Masters and then the UK Open, which has the Riley's qualifiers back. So we're going to get those Riley's qualifiers back, the 16 Riley's qualifiers from up and down the country, which, remember, that's what gave us Rob Cross. It's exciting. And obviously, our next one, which will be on Talk Sport, where we all get back together again, will be the match play, which is the highlight of my year.
So it's going to be so much to go under the bridge between now and then, though. I mean, we could have debutants there. We could have people coming from Q School having a good first 6 months of the year. One thing that I know Abby and Dan Dawson are looking forward to is the return of a possible Euro Tour normal schedule.
Euro Tour weekends are back. And I want to see Alan Souter at all of them, please. Because he's another player that we didn't mention, but I think he's going to have a phenomenal year.
Disappointing World Championship, but showed another side to his game in the World Championships, which will give him so much confidence. If he can do that when he was nowhere near his A game, he's going to be a danger to everybody because, he's got a bottle.
And let's just hope that we can persuade the powers that be that the final night of the Premier League in Newcastle would be Talk Sport worthy as well. Once we get to the climax of Premier League 2022, because I don't want to leave it till July till I see you lot all back together again for the match play. I'm so thrilled that we all got together for this chat, and I'm also quite pleased that my private bet happened myself that Paul Nicholson would mention something to do with the NFL, and he did. He mentioned the old Pittsburgh Steelers coach, so I'm really happy with that, that I got that out of my system. Mace, thank you. All the best to your fellow.
Thank you. We'll
see you soon. Nico, all the best. Good luck for what's to come, and I'll see you soon.
Appreciate it.
Abby, keep smiling, what's occurring and all that, and good luck to the Swans to try and...
The Swans.
Yeah, mid-table mediocrity.
Absolutely.
I dream of mid-table mediocrity at Birmingham City. And Murph, well, Sheffield Wednesday promotion. It could still happen. It's a tight old division, though.
It's the hope that kills you.
Thank you, guys and girls. This has been Talking Bull, the Darts podcast. Hope you've enjoyed it. I'm sure we'll do some more.